many comics that came out today on Wednesday.
So it's practically all of them.
No, it's not.
Yeah, there are, to be fair, there are a ton of comics that we're not talking about on the show. Of course, we talk about all of them on our secret podcast that we don't actually record.
Yes, in our brains.
Yes, our braincast.
The ultimate podcast is just thinking conversations.
I don't know if ultimate podcast is the right wording for that.
Aren't we all just podcasting all the time?
Oh, man. Whoa, that's deep bad. I'm really glad, by the way, we got very high before we did this.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Finally, for the first time.
I love marijuana. Let's get into this. First one we're going to talk about, Mr. Miracle, number 12 from DC Comics. Now, this is the last issue of one of the most critically acclaimed runs of our time, and I know that sounds like hyperbole, but it's absolutely true.
It is.
This is wrapping up the whole run by Tom King and Mitch Gerards. I want to talk about the issue, but I also want to talk about the run as a whole and see how you felt about it. Now, Pete, at the risk of derailing this immediately, I'm curious to go to you first, just because you have very mixed feelings about Tom King's books sometimes. They hit you very emotionally, very deeply.
It's too much, almost. I would also say that you have just mixed feelings in general.
Hey, thanks, man.
You're like a snow globe. You're a human snow globe.
We're going to point shit out about each other now that we're all fucking high?
This drug makes you critical, right?
As we all know, at age 13, we go through our choosing ceremony when we all choose our emotions. I chose 50%. Justin chose happy. You blew past it.
Yeah,
I want all rage all the time.
Give me all emotions at once all the time. Yeah.
What did you think about this book? What did you think about the series now
that it's done? I was really impressed with this series. Mm. I was not impressed with Vision as much. And I take heat for that constantly.
Yeah, that's truly a great comic book.
Well, yeah, to some people it is. But I was really impressed with the emotion and the power of this comic. I thought it was really amazing. And I thought it was going to end a completely different way than the way that it ended.
In what way?
I mean, the way they were kind of talking about how it's over. He's just it kind of ended on a happy note at the end.
Well, that's what I was going to say as well. Like, this book was so tense and so sort of stressful.
Yeah.
It felt like the characters were, especially Mr. Miracle, was dealing with a pretty intense bit of depression. And so it always felt like he was on the edge of losing it. And the fact that we sort of went through the series and it felt like at the end of last issue, everything was great. Mm-hmm. And then this was like, oh no, what are they going to do to fuck him?
Yep.
And instead, it was just sort of a nice ending where the characters really got to sort of feel out everything that has happened, almost like an epilogue or a coda.
So I took it a very different way.
Interesting.
Personally. And I think it is supposed to be ambiguous. That's what I took away from it. Certainly you could go in the direction of, wow, it's nice they worked everything out. They got out of these problems. They have a future. I looked at it as they're trapped. Like, he made a choice by the end not to escape, to live in this dream world that had been created for him, possibly by Darkseid, possibly by somebody else, possibly in the moment of his death. I don't think it's, again, totally supposed to be completely clear and up to your interpretation. Yeah. But there's that moment, this is big spoilers for the end, moment to the end where Big Barda turns and says, Darkseid is.
Yes.
And then she follows up with, yes, but we are as well. And what I took for that, so there was a tweet from Tom King that it crashed on me, honestly. I think that's the best way of describing it. Because he was like
Dave Matthews Band style.
Well, so
no, that's crash into me.
This
isn't
is
it?
This is pulling back a little bit and talking about the world. But there's a lot of comic book creators who are discussing things that are going on in the world. They're very political. They put their beliefs out there.
Right.
Tom King, despite his background in the CIA, despite his background in the government, does not do that.
Yeah.
He is very much stuck to the comics, at least publicly on
Twitter.
That
makes a lot of sense.
The tweet that he sent out before this issue hit was, this is my attempt to say something about the world of today. I hope you enjoy it. And that's it.
Wow.
And for me, that snapped in exactly what's happening.
Wow.
At least from my perspective now, looking at this issue, with the wavy TV lines that happen every once in a while, that we are trapped in this constant media world, this dark side world that is crushing down on us at all points, trying to steal the life from us, trying to push anti-life forward against us, suck everything that is good out of us. And the only thing we can do, we can't escape, but the only thing we can do is continue to exist.
But I thought that was such a positive message. I totally agree with everything you're saying, and I thought that was a great... There's so much tension of throughout the series of, will Mr. Miracle escape? Yeah. He's already dead. Like, what is happening? And then when we finally land on the idea that, like, no, he just has reckoned with the fact that he is sort of trapped in this life that he likes, but it is a jail cell in its own way, and he's, like, totally at peace with that. I think, what better... goal can you strike?
Also,
he's wearing a Starman t-shirt.
Yep.
And that's...
Wait, isn't it an Adam Strange t-shirt?
There is an Adam Strange t-shirt, but if you look right before that, he's wearing a Starman t-shirt.
Ooh,
don't you dare challenge me. Don't you dare challenge me.
Take it easy.
Because that's how I know he's happy. He's wearing a Starman t-shirt.
You know, relax. Oh. Anyways.
God, I'm so high right now.
I know that's one of the things that marijuana does to you. Makes you real angry.
Yeah.
Real fired up.
Yeah.
But also the fact that, like, I thought it was going to be this tone of, like, you know, he's dead because that's the way he kind of set up. But the fact that he kind of at the end said, I can always escape, gave me that hope of, like, oh, maybe he's not as doomed. Maybe he'll just try to figure a way out still.
But the escape is death, I think, is what he's talking about.
Right.
So you will always escape, but he also, in this issue, has created another life. So I think, I mean, Tom King, as always, is grappling with these super large ideas, and he doesn't fully point his finger like, this is right, everything's going to be fine, because that's not how life is. And I think the reason he's so good is because he's able to shape that into a superhero story, have some comedy in it, and just be a great writer, essentially.
I want to be clear. I think it is fantastic writing, gorgeous art. This was a phenomenal series across the board.
Yes.
Each individual issue felt like its own issue, which is something that I always really, really appreciate, as well as part of the mega story.
Yeah, each issue can stand out as, like, this is a great separate thing.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think you're right that there is a way of looking at it positively. I just read that ending and... it's upsetting to me. It's scary to think that there is no way out. You could keep trying to escape, but ultimately you're going to be trapped in this fiendish design created by ultimate evil. That's scary.
Alex, it's time to hold a mirror up to the world and take a hard look at everything. Okay, Alex?
I'm getting out of here.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, Alex, just keep smoking weed and enjoying the ride, bro.
Let me also throw out something that is very topical. Seeing Funky Flashman in this and on the same week that Stan Lee died was very sad, but also, like, it really crystallized who Stan Lee is inside comic books.
Sure.
And the sort of mark, I mean, we don't need to get into all of that now because it's a lot to talk about, but it was just so interesting to be reading this last issue, which is about life and death, and to see, like, a Stan Lee analog in the book at the same time.
Right. Particularly because this is a Jack Kirby creation.
Yeah.
So don't force your Stan Lee narrative on this, bro.
Again, pretty lot of emotions mixed up.
Yes, a lot of emotions.
But there's no doubt that is a Stan Lee analog.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 100%. This issue is great. I think you guys knew this. Definitely pick it up. If you've been avoiding the series for whatever reason, go back, pick it up, and trade. Yes, Pete.
I mean, I kind of wanted a more of an ending. I was like, I very much appreciated the artistic kind of, like, weaving that it took and the choices that it made. But I did kind of want more of a, oh shit, because the whole time it's Darkseid is, Darkseid is. And then it's like, it doesn't hit you over the head. It's a small moment where Barda just says it. And it's like,
that's what was scarier to me. That's what was terrifying, is this realization that she's trapped in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also he didn't freak out when she said it. And
no,
like,
he knows that he's trapped.
Yeah. You
know, replace death. Replace Darkseid with death in this comic from issue 1 to 12, and that's what it is to me.
Or if you replace it with cake, that sounds pretty nice.
Okay, there you go.
Cake is...
I don't know. To be so stressed about cake means something's fucked up.
I mean, too much cake, bro.
Cake is coming. Surprise!
Let's move on to a Marvel comic. This is a big debut this week. Uncanny X-Men number 1. Now, the X-Men are all back together under...
So many
X-Men.
An uncanny amount.
Yes. Under new management, there's Ed Bryson, Matthew Rosenberg, and Kelly Thompson, right?
Yes, three
writers.
That's correct.
Yeah. And they are bringing everybody together. We're getting a weekly 10-week story that kicks off the new Uncanny X-Men. It's re-centering them as in their place in the Marvel Universe. This is an oversized issue. I thought this was great. I had a lot of fun reading this. Yeah. I'm curious to hear what you guys thought.
I also really loved it. I've been wanting this for a while. I feel like X-Men has been all over the place a little bit. This is exactly what I think the comic needed, and I think it's a fantastic team that's on this right now.
Yeah, great team. I like this issue a lot. It's the character management throughout this issue is so good. The voices are captured really well, and they move through so many characters.
Yeah.
While giving them each a moment to be themselves and sort of exist within the larger plot line. I will say my one criticism is sort of a larger world criticism. This feels like a half step to the X-Men paradigm that I want or need. I want a like sort of a harder reset. This feels like, oh, everyone's together, but we're still sort of dealing with little things and so much continuity I want a hard flag plant in like Giant X-Men number one that they were like, none of that, everything happened before, but we're doing something different. And I think at this point in the X-Men comic book universe, we need a huge move like that.
Dealing with a lot of the stuff.
And that's
right
what I'm
now.
Saying. This is a half step toward that, and I'm ready for the big step.
Sure. I can see what you're saying. Things I'd say. One, you're probably reading X-Men Red, right?
Yes.
That to me is the giant size X-Men. That's. Granted, it's in the middle of continuity, but that is so beyond doing its own thing. Tom Taylor is giving it its own feel, its own mission.
It's totally different, but narratively, I need a bigger swing.
But getting back to Uncanny X-Men, I agree with Pete here that I think, so there's things that, Pete's very excited for those of you listening at home. There's a bunch of things that happen in this issue that are very typical X-Men things. There's a senator who's like, mutants are bad. Yep. There's a mutant cure. There's some weird time traveling stuff going on. But these are very smart writers who are on this book. And to your point, I get it that it's not like, this is the bold. You can come in and have no idea what's going on, X-Men. But I think the characters, like we have Jubilee call it out and be like, oh, we've done this before.
Yeah.
And the feel of the book to me is they're going through the motions with the X-Men, but by the end, something new has come in, something more dangerous that's going to change everything going forward. And that's very exciting to me.
It is. And like I like this issue
also
a lot.
Includes one of your favorite characters, so that's also why you're really loving it.
You're talking about Multiple Man, of course.
No, I'm talking about Kitty Pryde.
Kitty Pryde.
Seems to be a focus.
You're super creepy.
Yeah. I agree. Like again, I really like this issue, but just larger world.
It's a fantastic issue, and it gets people excited about X-Men again. I'm all about it.
I will say, actually, on the character note, though, if you haven't read the Multiple Man series from Matthew Rosenberg, I strongly recommend picking that up before this. There's no plot tie necessarily, but I think tonally it sets up where Multiple Man is.
Yeah, he's a problem.
Yes, he's a problem, and it's awesome. Like, what they have done with that character is so good and so much fun. I can't wait to see where the rest of this goes.
Agreed.
Moving on to a big Boom comic book release, Firefly number one from Greg Pak.
Yeah,
now,
this
is taking it back a little bit for those of you who are Firefly fans. It is after the series, but before the movie. So if that implies certain characters are still alive. And I thought this was great. I mean, I'm a fan of Firefly, really like the series, love the movie. This captured the tone perfectly of all the characters. Felt like another episode of the series. Great stuff.
Agreed. Isn't that what we want? We want more Firefly. Firefly is one of those things that everyone was like, why is it canceled? How am I going to go on without more of this? And now we have it in that sort of bottle world of the series as opposed to the movie.
And the other Firefly comic books that I've read have all been sequels to Serenity.
Yeah.
And nothing against it. They're all fine and well written. They're all real sad because everybody was so sad.
It was a sad time.
Yeah. This is so much cleaner. This is so much easier to get into, so much simpler to understand. There's some fun, neat history stuff that happens that was never dealt with in the series, and I think that's great. I can't wait to read more of this.
I feel like this Greg Pak guy is a really great writer.
He's a hot young writer.
Yeah.
He's a young gun.
And I think this is the perfect place for this. And I think it's very exciting. It gives the people what they want. So I'm on board.
Moving on to a Valiant comic book out today, Bloodshot Rising Spirit number one. This is jumping back in time, showing us maybe the origin of Bloodshot. Yeah. The Bloodshot books, by the way, in case you haven't picked them up, have been so good. They follow this guy who is infected with nanites. He's not indestructible, but he can get blasted a lot and then eat some meat and get a little better.
He's sort of Deadpool-esque, but not super jokey.
But he actually gets hurt. Yeah, and he's not actually jokey. But they've used the opportunity to go in some strange directions. He jumped to the future. He's been to the world of the dead. So this is very much bringing it back to basics as a mercenary with some weird memory issues. What'd you guys think about this issue?
I think Valiant, amongst all of the comic book companies, takes like really big swings with their characters and moves them into those places like you're talking about with the other Bloodshot arcs. I'm curious where they're going. They're going to be sort of, we still don't know what Bloodshot's actual life before he became Bloodshot was. This is a story that may be correct, that may be his life, but probably isn't. And that's interesting to me.
I agree with you. I did not love this issue at first, to be perfectly honest with you. And then by the end, there's some twists that happen that made me like it a lot more.
I agree, because I was like, oh, he's a gangster?
That's a bummer.
Yeah, and because he was sort of an unlikable person. And so, like, as you say, like the reveals as we get to the end, it was like, okay, I'm intrigued.
This was, to me, a slow burn first issue where it was like, you're like, wait, what's going on? But then by the end, you're really excited for the next issue. I think it did a great job of setting up a fun series.
Yeah, it's an interesting turn just because I have loved the previous Bloodshot series so much, and this is going so far back in time, nixing all of the continuity, all of the supporting cast. But yeah, like we said, I think it's an interesting start and curious to see where it goes next. Moving on to Image Comic Books, Bitter Root number one.
Yeah.
Really? Pete, you like this?
Yeah, this is Sanford Green's thing. He's been talking about this for years. I've talked to him at Comic Cons. He's been like super proud of this book. I think the art, the world is really fantastic. Setting up kind of a cool big event, big kind of like monsters and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, if we set it up a little bit, it's a family of monster hunters, essentially, living in Harlem in the 30s, is it, or the 40s? I don't remember the date exactly, but I agree. This reminded me of, the art is fantastic in it, first off. It reminded a lot of Umbrella Academy, where the writing is really smart and really unique, and it puts we get exposed to the characters. We see sort of what their games are, what they're trying to get going in their personal lives, and are introduced into a really interesting world.
This book to me very much was like an onion. Like, it just kept unpeeling and offering more and more layers to it, where I thought it was one thing, and then I'd get to the next page and be like, oh, okay, this is what this book is. And then I'd get to the next page and be like, oh, this is what this book is.
Yeah.
There's so much packed into this first issue.
Yeah.
It's definitely a good value, I think.
Yeah.
Which, more than anything.
Aren't we all looking for values?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I loved it.
I got this marijuana we're smoking for like $1.99 each.
Yes, this is oregano, value. But that's beside the point.
Yeah,
it's delicious.
I think this is
it's
cool.
It's making my pizza real good.
It's a cool world. Fantastic first issue, kind of getting you excited for more. I'm completely on board. Can't wait for more.
Moving back to Marvel, Captain Marvel Prelude number one. Now, Marvel, every once in a while, leading up to the movies, does a little bit of a comic issue that fills in the gaps in the MCU movies. They come in different ways. Some of them are independent stories. Some of them are just kind of walking you along. I think that's where this one falls. We get to follow Nick Fury and Maria Hill as they go through Age of Ultron and then Infinity War. And I feel like there's one or two others. Oh, Civil War, they're in the background of as well. So mostly, in my opinion, and I want to hear what you guys think, it's a lot of business.
I mean, it's sort of like fearing, like if you're a huge fan of, a TV show like, Arrow. I never met a fan of that, but I guess they are
you're
out there.
You're fucking looking at one, you piece of shit.
If you're like, oh, what happened between that over the commercial break? How did Arrow get from that building to his home? And if we saw that he took a car, that's what this book is.
Yeah, well, that's kind of my question. Like, who is this for?
You it's know, for the super fans.
No, because the super fans seen the movies and know what's going on. So, like, why are you recapping that for me when I know what's going on?
Well, it offers a little bit. It's a different perspective. It's from the different points of the point of view of Nick Fury, a character who we rarely see what he's thinking.
Right.
You're usually just seeing other characters be like, oh, Nick Fury's here. Whoa.
But I don't think there was any new information in this. I didn't this react,
is,
really.
Okay, here's... I have a couple of feelings about what this book is for. And I will say on the positive side, I do think they get Nick Fury's voice down in this book, which is great. I think, first of all, it's for the incredibly hardcore fans
right.
who at conventions are like, I just wanted to know, how did Nick Fury get the helicarrier there during Age of Ultron? And then what did he do immediately afterwards? So that's part of it. Obviously, that's not going to sell a lot of comics. I think the second part is so you have something leading into Captain Marvel that is on the shelves. So if somebody wanders into a comic book shop, they're not going to be like, oh, cool, you have a comic with Nick Fury? Oh, I'm sorry, he's Nick Fury's son that also lost his eye and is in continuity, but not the original Nick Fury? Cool, got it.
If I never have to hear that again, that's the world I want to live in.
But that's who I think it's for. Yeah. I think it's for both hardcore and casual fans, people who have just seen the movies who are like, I don't know how to read a comic, because that is a legitimate concern that I've heard from a lot of people. So coming in and being like, okay, I've seen this movie, I get this, I'm reading this, I'm following this along. Yeah. Oh, that was kind of interesting. What else can I check out?
Yeah.
So it's a doorway more than anything. That's at least my interpretation.
It's not a window.
Doorway.
Every window is a doorway if you just knock three times.
What?
Wow. That sounds smart, but it's very stupid. Like a lot of things we say.
Yep. Let's move back to a DC comic book. Electric Warriors number one from Steve Orlando, who we had on the show a couple of weeks ago. Please do check out that show. He talked about Martian Manhunter and that book. Sounds amazing.
Yeah, can't wait for
this. This is a very different book. I believe he actually teased it us a little bit. I didn't quite understand what he was talking about at the time, but now I still kind of don't understand.
Yeah. This book is wild. It feels.
I loved it, though.
No, I did. I loved it a lot, too. Like, it feels like an Image number one, like a creator-owned series, because it is in DC continuity, and we get a couple hits on that in this book. But it is wild. It is setting a very specific world up where it's Earth. Earth has sort of fallen out of grace, but has been welcomed into a larger galactic world. Animals run shit on Earth, and humans suck.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not totally familiar with the Kamandi stuff, but I believe the idea that this is like 100 years after Kamandi or Kamandi or however you pronounce it.
It's like the new end of the DC.
Right, exactly. So that was always like, oh, there's a lone boy in a world where there's animal people and it's the post-apocalypse. But this is like, well, they've brought society back now.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Like, it's crazy to set up that new piece of continuity so far down the road. But that's what Steve Orlando does so well.
Well, and I love that he's like, oh, what's the end of the DC universe? I'm going to push it a little bit further and finds this whole new world to unlock that is like, feels both retro and super futuristic at the same time.
Right. And the visuals are so good. All of the animal characters, they introduce this octopus character who glows light. The dialogue bubbles are fascinating. The lettering is good in this book. But really, it's about two brothers on very different sides of the coin and how things end up changing in terms of their circumstances.
Yeah, it'd be hard if they were on the same side of the coin because there's only one.
Yeah,
there's only one side to a coin.
Yeah. Man. Another very smart
dude. Oh, man, we got to lay off this weed, dude. This weed is really fucking with us.
Man, how many sides are there on this coin?
We just on a giant coin right now?
We're a coin, man.
Oh, man.
We're all coins. But whose pocket are we in?
I'm excited about the next issue. I like the teaser for the next issue.
Yeah.
That's what I feel about
that. You didn't like this issue.
Well, I thought it was... like the animal people were awesome, but then it was like Superman's cape, right? Because it's DC, and I was like, meh. And then it was like light beings fighting, and I was like, meh. But like the art was fantastic, but I feel like the teaser at the end for the next issue should be a lot more fun.
I mean, it's going to turn into a fight club, so you should be having a good time.
Hell yeah.
This is like the Flash Gordon movie for the DC comic universe.
Ooh. You're talking about Flash. Yep. He'll save every one of us.
Moving to another future society. Fuck, this is coming out from Dark Horse on November 21st, so no spoilers here. But Lightstep, number one. Pete. No spoilers.
Thanks. This book's fun. It feels like a great Euro comic. I'm trying to think of what the name of the issue this reminded me of. It was like Doll. That was really cool.
Yeah.
So I like this a lot.
Yeah. Just to give you guys the setup, because it is in the beginning of the book. It basically, rich people live on worlds that are moving at light speed. They live a life of luxury. And
of course they do, those fucking assholes.
While everybody else toils on regular moving worlds, and they provide all of the materials, all of the labor for everybody. And while one day passes on these worlds, people live and die and live full lifetimes. So it's a neat sci-fi concept. There's a lot of setup in this issue. There's definitely it's one of those first issues to me that feels like by the end, okay, here we go. Now we're getting into it. That was
story
like
time.
Yeah, story time, which is always a little bit of a bummer for me, but the art is very good. Again, I think the world is very creative, and I think it'll be interesting to see how it works going forward.
Sky Doll. That's the comic I was talking about.
Yeah, that's a good touchstone for that. All right, next one we're going to talk about. This is from Image Comics. This is one of my favorite comics coming out right now. Beauty number 25. Now, I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with this book. Have you been reading it regularly?
I have not. Okay. And tell me.
So I want to give you guys who haven't been reading it the setup, because it has gotten so far afield from that. But this issue is so neat if you have been consistently reading it. The idea of the book initially was there is a STD called the Beauty.
Oh, that's right. I remember you talking about this.
We've
talked about it a couple of times at various intervals. You become young, you become hot, but people start spontaneously combusting. And the first Beauty series they did followed that to the logical conclusion, changed the world for the good, and left it in a very weird, interesting place. And then they came back to a series and took it back before that and made it into almost a crime anthology set in the world of the Beauty. So how did it affect different people? How did it affect different characters? And it's jumped around to all of these different stories. The cool thing they're doing here that they set up at the end of the last issue is you are following the cop characters from one of the arcs of the Beauty, and they come up to a crime scene. This is in issue 24. Come up to a crime scene, and they're like, oh, man, this looks like there's a total bloodbath. What the fuck is going on here? And this somebody jumps out of a window and lands in front of them, and it's the character from the other arc you've been following.
Yeah.
And that's where we pick up on this issue. And I just think that's such neat storytelling.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And that this issue has almost nothing to do with the Beauty other than they mention it, but it is just like a balls to the wall action issue.
It's a wicked gunfight. It's like so the scene from
Heat. Also, don't forget about the knife boot. I'm a sucker for a knife boot.
Yeah. Nice. Great.
Yeah. It's crazy to me that a title can be so many things, but it still work. That it still feel of a piece.
Just good comic storytelling. I mean, the pace and like the way they go about showing a gunfight or a series of gunfights was awesome. It reminded me of the one long gunfight shot in True Detective season one. And like, it just feels, it's so fluid. It's really well done.
Yeah. And particularly if you have been reading consistently, it's so much fun to see these characters actually interacting each other because they have such different missions and such different goals.
Yeah.
It's neat. It's nice to read a 25th issue that feels like a 25th issue. Right. If you know what I mean.
I didn't read any of that other shit, but I really enjoyed this. I thought it was badass, and I mean, I don't know if I'll like the other stuff, but this was a fantastic
definitely go issue. Back and read it. There's despite the STD premise of the book, there's a lot of big action just like this. The characters are great. The first miniseries is very different from the main series, but they both really work, and I really like them a lot.
You had me a knife boot.
Moving back to Marvel Comic Books, The Black Order number one. This is spinning out of the Avengers No Surrender arc, which found the Black Order formerly working for Thanos, now working for the Game Master and the other, what are they called? Not Eternals, not Champions of the Universe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I don't know why I'm blanking on this right now. Must be the marijuana, you guys.
Cool.
So they're on their own. They are independent operators, and they're kind of chilling out and
Wait,
joking
did you say
around
the us. Challenger and the Grandmaster?
Yeah.
Okay. I was trying to figure out
Elders what. Of the Universe.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry to everybody listening at home who was just screaming at us. Elders of the Universe. Elders of the Universe. We figured it out. What'd you guys think about this book?
This is fun. It's sort of like it's like a fun team book, but everyone's mean.
Yeah.
So that's fun. I'm curious how, cause we're rooting for these villains that are meant to be, we're like the scariest villains in the world at a point. We're like the four horsemen of the apocalypse for Thanos. And so it's sort of interesting to now be on their side as they like stop, they try not to fuck up their lives.
It's also interesting for me because, you know, I'm recognizing these guys from being bad guys from other stuff. So it was kind of crazy to see them together,
they've always been together.
Well,
yeah.
No. Well, I mean, maybe you mean, what's her name? Black Swan.
Black Swan. Yeah.
She was sort of separate from them for a long time until we eventually realized that she was one of them. When they came to Earth, when the Black Order first came to Earth.
So here's my slight issue with this book. I think if you forget my issue with this issue, if you forget everything that came before, it's a fun villain team book. The art's good. The action is fun. The dialogue is cute. They introduce these new alien species that are a lot of fun as well. But it's so tonally different from how we've seen the Black Order before.
Yeah.
And when they were invented by Jonathan Hickman, they were straight up like Jonathan Hickman characters. Like they didn't even feel like Marvel characters. They felt like Jonathan Hickman characters, all in black and white, talking in parables.
Yeah.
These epic,
it's meant to be just scary.
Yeah. Epic grand characters. And instead you have Corvus Glaive being like, am I funny?
Do you think I'm funny? Yeah, that was weird. That was my thing was like,
If you forget everything that came before, it's a fun bit of dialogue, and it's fun to see that character doing that.
Corvus Glaive is the Robin Williams of the Black Order, though.
Yeah, well, he was doing, he like kind of squeezed his nose, and he was like, I'm a bird now. Yeah. Oh, now I'm flying around. Oh, look at me. Yeah. Oh, I'm crawling through the grass. Oh, I'm a little rabbit.
It's good.
Wow. Really. So, yeah.
The spirit of Robin was with us briefly.
I agree. It was kind of weird to root for the bad guys, and then also kind of weird to root for bad guys who are like, do you think I'm funny? And it's like, no, I don't think you're ever funny. You're a villain. So it's a weird premise, but it's interesting enough that it kept me in it the whole time.
Yeah, I really like the character of Black Swan. I'm curious to see how they sort of reconcile these tonal differences.
I wish this felt a little more epic, honestly. Like, it felt a little small to me, frankly. Yeah.
It feels a little bit like the Deadly Foes of Spider-Man, the Nick Spencer series.
Superior
Foes of Spider-Man.
Which is a weird tone to put for the Black Order.
Yes, agreed. And so I don't know. I think that's that tonal mismatch maybe proved to be good. We'll see.
We'll see where it goes. Moving on to something that is supposed to be funny and is funny. Rugrats See for Christmas number one from Boom Comics. This is by Daniel Kibblesmith, who we've had on the show a couple of times. Cullen Crawford, his longtime writing partner, channeling the old Rugrats cartoons, but for... See for Kanaka. Oh
yeah,
my
I was
God.
Gonna say, Jesus. I don't think
how
it's Christmas.
You,
Jesus.
I see where you make the mistake, though. There is a C in Christmas.
Yes,
it's
there
the
is.
First letter.
It's very confusing. I thought this was great. I thought they channeled the voices perfectly. I thought it was very funny and fun. It's a big, oversized issue as well.
Yeah.
And like they even talk about in the book, there's not a lot of Kanaka stuff out there. So it's nice to have a Kanaka comic that I can give my kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't watched Rugrats in years.
Oh, you dumb baby.
This picks up on a lot of the dangling plot threads from the series. And, of course, Rugrats in Paris, the cinematic expansion of the TV series.
Wow, you guys know a lot of Rugrats. Why would that be?
Just to be clear for devotees, it takes place before Rugrats all grown up.
Yeah. it fills in some gaps.
Yeah,
that
really
I think
does.
The super fans, like we talked about before, have been wondering about.
Yeah,
how did Chucky get from point point A to point B, he fucking crawled.
even though there had, so much time has gone by, I really felt like they nailed the characters and it was great. And, you know, even though it's a, you know, quote unquote kid's book, there's a lot of fun stuff. I love the Rosebud 9000. There was good bits in there.
I mean, Rugrats was a funny show. They had a lot of jokes for not kids in the Rugrats TV show.
Yeah, it's like you're saying, it works for adults, it works for kids, packed with gags, but also some really sweet moments as well, which is nice. Definitely pick this up, even if you're not into Hanukkah. I apologize about saying it was a Christmas special. Moving back to Valiant Comic Books, Ninja K number 13, also out today. The Ninja K series by Christos Gage has been great, hardcore action across the board. This one is super rough because it's Ninja K fighting against Eternal Warrior, who's one of his very good friends.
Yeah.
Another really great issue of this, I think. I said that the weirdest way possible.
You did say that weird, like you had a gun to your head, but you don't, right, Pete? Pete's about to get out his knife book.
I love this comic book.
His sneaker knife. I like this a lot.
Wait, real quick, can I interrupt about something?
Sure.
What would we say on this podcast to let people know that there was a gun to our head?
I think we would say it's finally happened. It's finally happened. Pete has a gun to our head. and then we realize this isn't going out live. So we're fucked. I like this a lot. I love the way that we have the dialogue of the action. And then we also get Ninja K's interior monologue at the same time and how they're often like real people. He's thinking something else while he's talking about something different. Like in most comics, the interior monologue is literally just about the action.
I thought that's how everybody thought for a long time.
Oh, dude,
comics really led me astray for that.
I'm doing my taxes up here.
When I'm opening the refrigerator, I'm like, okay, opening the refrigerator now.
Cool. Fuck you, dude. That's how I act. That's how I work.
Spreading the peanut butter.
Yeah.
Spreading the jelly.
Can't wait for the sandwich. So I really like that. It's really great storytelling. And the other thing about Valiant Comics I was talking about earlier, they really connect their universe well. They take big swings and keep their universe tight, much like the Ultraverse from the 90s, if you remember that.
This is a great book. Moving on to our last title from DC Comics. G. Willow Wilson has come over to Wonder Woman with Wonder Woman number 58. This is kicking off a new big run for old 1D. How do you think it works?
1D.
1D. One Direction.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of amazing Wonder Woman runs, and so far I really like the way this started. I like the whole Steve kind of dream sequence thing. I really like the way they kind of set it up, started small to build towards a bigger thing. I think this was a really smart kind of first issue for this. I'm very much on board. It sucks when Wonder Woman isn't great, and so I'm excited for some great Wonder Woman.
I like this. Had notes of the George Perez reboot from the 80s in a nice way. I love when we start a Wonder Woman run in the mythological world and then come out to what's happening in the regular world. And that's what this does. Very interested to see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. This is, to get back to what you were saying about Uncanny X-Men, this is not a big, bold swing right out of the bat by any means, but it checks in with the characters we know. Yeah. It nails the voices. There's some cool, interesting, weird stuff that happens by the end. But like you said, it feels like classic Wonder Woman, and that's kind of all we want at this point.
Yeah.
All right, there we go. Thank you so much, guys. If you would like to support the show and other shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by, and please tell your friends about it. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for the podcast and more, and we'll see you at the Comic Book Shop.
Yeah, smoke more weed.
What a great message, Nice
Chi Chan Chong over here.
Yeah.